to a part one discussion where I had to leave to another appointment at the very moment that I was actually starting to record. So this is going to be a kind of a review, but also a continuation of exactly what I've been talking about, which is the fact that war is a racket. And what do I mean by that? It basically means that it's a chaotic mess. It's unorganized, and it's in the line of racketeering, which is associated with the tinkering of various elements of powers in order to get a desired result. War being a racket, it's a profiteering motivated circumstance is the best way to put it. Now, there are a lot of military industrial complex companies. Raytheon comes to mind, Lockheed Martin, Boeing. If you just take a look at their stocks, I'm sure that they're very high, going up, because war is a racket. There's a profit to be made in war. Now, supply and demand, right? So if war is happening, more weapons, more bombs are being made, more ammunition is being produced. That's a lot of money. Wars are very costly. They're costly in oil as well, which is the world's number one source of energy, unfortunately, for all of us. But that is the way it is. It's the way the world works. And so what I find extremely surprising in the last 48 hours is the intensity of people's feelings in this war, which I would consider, and I would assume that the people involved consider, a spiritual war. You see, because both sides of this war in Israel and with Hamas, or now what we would consider Palestine because of the bombings today and yesterday, is that they believe it's a spiritual war. They believe that they are under spiritual attack from one another. They also feel that it is in their spiritual obligation to defend themselves, but also there's a deep-seated fear, and I would even go as far to say as hatred, for these two groups with one another. And that's a very difficult thing to get past. Because look at Ukraine and Russia. There's not like a pure hatred between the two. Now, there can be in terms of historical context with communism and the invasion of Poland and of Ukraine, and then the occupation of Ukraine by the Stalinist government of communism. But that's since long been gone. So you could say that communism has caused a lot of hatred. I would think that the Taiwanese people in Taiwan very much hate the Chinese communists, because essentially Taiwan is the capitalists who left during the Red Revolution in China in the 50s and 60s. They landed on Taiwan, almost in reverse, the Cuba to America concept. But they're all in Taiwan, a very small island, which has a very high and successful GDP, by the way. Just goes to show the power of capitalism and its ability to produce better nations. But I think more than anything, with this pure hatred between the two groups, very, very spiritually connected, very, very spiritually called, and they have very, very similar spiritual backgrounds, Jews, Muslims, Abrahamic faiths. A lot of people could argue against that. Well, no, that's, we're not like them because of blah, blah. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is it's almost like an ancient family feud is the way I look at it. And that has been going on for generations, okay? So what we're witnessing is a war that has actually been happening for a long, long time, since recorded history, probably. And similar to Russia-Ukraine, there was a series of problems that occurred prior to the invasion of Ukraine that people seem to miss. People seem to miss the context. You see, because most people, given that it's breaking news and all, they only see what they're being shown in the moment, and that's the only context that they have. They don't understand the buildup to the conflict, which is also very, very important. You know, in the law, when you're at court and you're battling in court, you're going to see the context of how things happened the way that they did. It's the way you do a criminal investigation, especially if someone's murdered. You wonder, well, who was she having intimate issues with? I don't know, I'm saying she in this example, but say if a woman was killed, where were their issues and conflicts? How did they start? What was the point of generation of the conflict, the genesis of the conflict? Where did it all start? And how did it progress? Who said what? Were there threats made early on? Did we see a pattern? Were people missing something? You know, they study criminal law because they want to know, how do you avoid crime? How can you deter crime? By picking up on much needed information going into what would be considered the crime, the major crime or the heinous crime. I mean, assault and, you know, harassment, that's criminal. But the killing of someone, that's, you know, that's the point that everyone else sees on the news. You see, and it's literally killing people. I mean, I get it. But in this example, what I'm saying is you're seeing the breakout of conflict, but you're not up to speed on the context of the conflict prior to this injustice that we've been witnessing, right? It's a string of injustices. It's a lot of context built into it. So I kind of say that because we have to remember that everyone's visceral reaction is to the event that just took place, but they're missing the context of a lot of events that have taken place, including entire wars. Okay, 2014, there was a major war in Israel that people don't even know about and understand. Very similar people, Hamas involved, very similar circumstances. The Yom Kippur War, not even probably saying that, pronouncing it correctly, but that war as well with Arab states and Israel. There's always been this turmoil in that part of the world. Now, America goes into Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's essentially the Middle East, but we're there for the oil, and you know, we're there to put up puppets and governments and things like that to control various natural resources. Which again, I mean, if America's an empire and we're building towards our dominance in the world by being an empire, that's not what I signed up for as an American. That's not what I approve of. However, if we're going to go out in the world and dominate other countries and take their natural resources and circumvent their democracies by putting in puppets that we control, I'd rather have that than a complete failure of government and any kind of meritocracy or like American world order agenda, okay? I'd rather have that world order, like America's perspective being put on the world, I'd rather have that than complete incompetence and a lack of leadership, like what we're kind of witnessing right now in America. That's, you know, what I'm saying is comparing the sort of old world order to the new world order, which is the old world order is kind of that Bush and Dick Cheney, you know, dynasty, even going back into, I think of Henry Kissinger being how involved he was in the State Department, which is foreign affairs essentially for America. So many generations up until Reagan. So we're talking about even the early 80s. You know, there were books and concepts, you know, written about this sort of American empire, where we have military bases around the world and we monitor and surveil other nations. We bully, harass other countries into kind of perceiving the world that we want to create. Again, I'm almost to a point where if we're promoting republicanism, which is what we truly are, we're a constitutional republic. If we're promoting a constitutional republic and we want other people to live like Americans and we're leading the way, that's fine in my eyes. That's fine. But what it has become is this corrupt, rotten ability for politicians and bureaucrats and corporatists, people involved in the military-industrial complex and the technological complex that we now exist in with social media and things, to profit and to selfishly garner their own power from America's greatness. That's where I have a problem. And now that we've had that for so many generations, you can almost consider the 2000s, really, just since the 2000s, 9/11 going forward, it has been the genuine rot of that system that once was promoting American democracy around the world, genuinely, but some people thinking genuinely, because there's people that work at the State Department and they work in embassies in Germany and they work in embassies in Japan, they work in embassies in Thailand and places, and they want to promote Americanism. And I get it. That's a beautiful, wonderful mission, if you want to put it that way. Forcing, coercion, all those things, not a fan. However, in the 2000s and with everything with the Middle Eastern war since then, all of that has shown that that kind of diplomacy, that kind of foreign affairs thinking, it's now rotten to the core, where so many self-absorbed people are involved in it that they're kind of like, honestly, you look at Hunter Biden and all the crazy stuff that he's done, that represents the political class in DC. That is the regular bureaucrat. Do you understand? Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, is a representation of a large amount. I'm not going to say a majority, but like larger than you think. A large amount of bureaucrats who work for the FDA or chiefs of staff who work in the White House. Or even people who work in Congress, sons, daughters of congressmen, congresswomen, they're rotten to the core, rotten. They're Hunter Bidens everywhere. Do you understand where we are? This is where America is. The political class. Washington, D.C. is the richest city in the country now. Go ahead and look this up. Just surpassed San Francisco, all those tech billionaires. Washington, D.C. is the richest city in America. What do they produce over there in D.C.? Man, I almost forgot. Do they produce cars? Are they building technology? Are they building AI? Are they constructing amazing buildings? What are they creating in D.C.? Corruption. They're selling American secrets. They're selling all of America's power out of D.C. That is what's happening in America today, if I could put a cap on it. What we're witnessing in warfare, the racketeering, the profiting, the selfish, absorbed politicians who want to see war, who benefit, profit from warfare, okay? It's a horrible situation. And that is the kind of the overall way I look at this is you look at an ancient war that's been going on since biblical times, okay? And then another sense of violence occurs in that part of the world and everyone jumps in with their opinions so quickly, so fast, not even letting the ink dry on what the fuck is going on. And you know, I'm seeing a lot of videos, I'm seeing a lot of pictures of stuff that's not even from that war. A lot of misinformation. Just remember, just like with the Ukraine war broke out, I had people who I respected and I acknowledged and I liked their information. I had people believing that there was the ghost of Kiev and there was a jet fighter killing Russian jets in the air and he was an ace and he was like Tom Cruise in Top Gun, and he was taking out all these Russian planes. And the story was completely made up. It was complete war propaganda. I had people I completely respected, that I enjoyed their information. I respect their information. They went and shared that ridiculous story of a fighter jet pilot killing all these Russian jets. And I'm like, dude, that's pathetic. It's pathetic. The fact that you would even believe that, the fact that you would be suckered in to sharing videos and pictures and stories that are fucking completely false. This is where people have to have a fucking level head. You have to look at things and you have to look at all sides. The black and white in this whole thing is the danger zone. If you're black or white, you're in the danger zone. You're limited in perspective. You're not seeing the full picture. Look at the picture. Be forced to look at both sides. See it the way it is. That is what we call being judicious. Judicious and discerning. Knowing that these are all God's people. These are all God's people. A lot of people find offense to that. They think one is God's people. They think another is God's people. I'm telling you, they're all God's people. They're all God's children. Even they spiritually understand that. Yet they're at war with one another, destroying one another. And there are people and powers at play that want to profit from this opportunity. They want to see chaos because they benefit from chaos. There's a famous Democratic strategist who said, "Never let a crisis go to waste." I think he was referring to a mass shooting, wanting to grab the guns, right? Let's take the guns away from law-abiding citizens, all the things, create new laws, ban assault weapons, all the things. Never let a crisis go to waste. What a wise use of words. It explains foreign diplomacy from U.S. diplomats and U.S. interventionalism. It explains it all in one sentence because we have done this with 9/11. We do this with chaos and crazy ass stories that we hear from around the world, that we use it to get U.S. involvement. But here's the thing that I personally believe. I believe that our Constitution is a wonderful piece of a document that establishes our government, and it allows various different types of freedoms. It creates the government in the three different branches. It's a beautiful government. It's a balance of powers. If used wisely, it can be a check on each other. And I do believe it's a great system. If we could promote that, constitutional republics, okay, republicanism, not the Republican Party, but republicanism. You need to understand that. Americanism is republicanism because it's a republic, but it's a constitutional republic. Americanism is that layered in a cake and baked in the oven and coming out nice and fresh. That's the Constitution. The Constitution is a legal binding document to all American citizens, which I do not believe should be granted to just anybody coming across the border. I do not believe should be granted to just anybody born of other citizens from other nations. Citizenry and the blessings of the Constitution is what America can gift to each person who rightfully is born here and can be raised here and have those types of freedoms. So they want to go elsewhere and travel, that's up to them. But the point is that they were blessed with American passport and they're blessed with American citizenship. It's one of the most sought after things in the entire world. Let me say that again. American citizenship is one of the most sought after things in the entire world. Is that because we're a racist country? Of course fucking not, as I mentioned in part one. It's ridiculous to even consider that. Of course, have we had our past just like the rest of world fucking history? Abso-fucking-lutely. But are we the worst house on the motherfucking block? No, we are far from it. We are the best house in a bad neighborhood. Bad neighborhood being the rest of the world. All the other countries in the world. So people need to understand that. Get that straight. Respect the fact that if you're an American citizen and you're listening to this right now, you have the most sought-after representation. The most sought-after gift is American citizenship. Now, as I mentioned earlier, my belief is that you take Americanism, you take these concepts that we talk about, and you promote them to the world. You don't force them, but you promote it by being your greatest self. This is also encompassing how America should look at itself and take care of its own country, take care of its own people, take care of the water in Flint, Michigan, take care of the border, take care of the people who are homeless here in America, who are without homes, struggling. That is something that America should focus on. Again, is a homeless person in America richer than a middle-class person in Thailand? Absolutely they are, believe it or not. And it's not just because of possession and what they lack. It's because of the American citizenship. Even a homeless person in America is better off, and they are still gifted with the most sought-after thing in the world, which is American citizenship. So we should be focusing on ourselves. And in America, as we focus on ourselves, we are able to help and share in the joy, in the abundance with us, with others. We can share all of this with other nations and develop trade and trade our ideas, our creativity, as well as incredibly manufactured products and services that are born here in America. That's kind of what I believe, just generally. So when I see another war break out, and I understand all the profiteering that's going on and all the advantage that's being taken of these people, innocent people, both sides are going to get funding. Both sides are going to be supported in their hatred. I just want you to understand that. No matter how you land on this issue, if you pick a side, you are funding and supporting more death. Either side, by the way. Either side. This is what we have to get. And if you want to know how the world really works, especially in U.S. diplomacy and the U.S. State Department and the way that people have been running in economies around the world and how America does actually have influence in other economies and other countries, you have to read a book called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Very powerful book. It speaks about somebody who was working for a, what we would call a nonprofit or a non-governmental agency, essentially. And they assisted in contracting with other foreign countries. So they worked for an American company and they would go into other foreign countries and make sure that they would use their building materials or make sure that they would use their engineering. Had to deal with various civilian duties. However, this economic hitman was able to come into nations and he would conjure up these documents showing economic growth in Panama, for example. He actually went to Panama. He would show these economic, you know, oh, this is how Panama is going to grow and this is how it's going to be an amazing country in 10 years. And your investment with us in this country is going to be able to grow to this extent. And so he worked for various banking companies, the banks, okay? These are international monetary funds. This is the U.S. Bank. These are various banks and banking institutions that he would then go and try to convince these politicians in other countries to take loans from these banks. And these, it's called sharking in the financial world. But what you do is you're giving a loan to someone that you know can't really afford it, and that you know that the interest payments are going to be insane, you know that they're really not going to be cut out for it, and somehow one way or another, you're going to own the asset that was used in the loan. That's what sharking is. So check this out. These banks would invest in these foreign countries, and this guy, the guy writing the book, he's confessing to all the things that he's done. He's explaining how he would be the guy talking to these politicians, convincing these politicians in third world countries to take these loans from these banks to build a shipping port, like a this is just one example. He would take these loans to build a shipping port that would be a port of entry that would all of a sudden have fees attached to it, almost like a toll road, if you can imagine that, as someone who drives, you know, on a toll road. It's like a shipping lane, okay? So this is just one example. So the politicians are like, wow, this is a wonderful idea. This is going to be a great thing. And you're telling us that this economic growth is going to happen here in this country. And we're very excited. We'll take the loan. So he convinces these politicians to take the loan from these banks, right? But the banks, they don't care about the interest. They don't give a fuck about the money. Why? Here's the crazy part. This is going to explain to you the financial matrix. The banks loaning the money, they're just typing up digits on a screen. They don't want the digits on a screen, and they don't want the interest payments that they're going to get from that country. You think, oh, the bank's making money. Bank's happy. Everyone's happy. No, not how this works. This is how banks would go in, loan the money, knowing that these countries, in many cases, would be destabilized, would be in rebellion, would have infrastructure corrupted or collapsed or having weather destroy it, these things occurring. They knew that there was depreciating, like it was going to be a depreciating opportunity. And so what the banks wanted to do was take advantage of it and then steal the asset. So watch what happens. They loan the money to these politicians. The politicians then build the infrastructure, whether it's a shipping port, a new highway, or a manufacturing plant. And then as those bank funds, those operations, the bank after 5-10 years realizes that, of course, the countries aren't going to be making those payments to pay off those loans. Because why? Here's the craziest part. In many cases, those very same banks would fund revolution in those countries. They would fund, okay, violence in those countries to destabilize those politicians that agreed to the loan 5 years earlier. They would do this in a timeline. What would then happen is the asset is completely functional, completely built, ready to operate. Once that occurred, give it 5 to 10 years, the banks had a plan to seize the asset as a way of being like, hey, we understand you can't pay the bills. No problem. We're going to take this asset as collateral, and then we're going to control this asset inside of your country. And then we're going to profit from the real asset. Why? The banks don't care about the digits on a screen. They want the real asset. Okay. And so, no, this doesn't apply to your car loan, all right? That's a depreciating asset. These are real assets built in countries across the world. If you want to learn about this, you got to read that book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and you'll see how these banks take full advantage of this. So look at this crisis going on in Israel. Look at this crisis going on in Ukraine. A lot of people, okay, I can't even say a lot of people, but if you don't know this, in Ukraine, there's an obvious war going on. In this war, there's collapse, there is destruction, and what will occur via the winners of whoever decides to win, and the treaty will occur however long from now, banks like BlackRock, which is kind of more of an investment firm, but banking institutions involved and intertwined with BlackRock are going to fund the rebuilding of Ukraine. And they're going to do this cycle again and again, as I just mentioned to you. They are going to take what was already there. They're going to rebuild it. They're going to fund it. They're going to rebuild it. But then they're going to realize that over time, they don't want the digits in interest payments that they're receiving from Ukrainians or Russians, whoever is winning. They don't want the digits back. They just infinitely made it up. Do you understand that the money that was printed automatically? It's infinite. It's a money. It doesn't matter. It's inflation. That's what we're dealing with. All the printing of money, right? Money doesn't actually matter to bankers. What matters is assets. Assets are what truly matter to the bankers and the banking cartel. So they're going to fund all of these operations in Ukraine once the war is over to rebuild it. But then they're going to go in and they're going to claim these assets as their own, because Ukrainians are going to default on these loans. This is this sharking that always occurs all of the time. So why are we leveling buildings in Gaza? Why is that truly happening? More than likely, it's killing civilians, it's doing all things, but more than likely, it's because there's going to be a rebuild. They've been waiting for this for a long time. Let's just get real. They've been waiting for this opportunity to level the city so they can rebuild it in their image. Now, is it an Israeli plan or is it a bank cartel? I'm not sure right now, but it's clear to me that they are using this attack as an excuse to do this very thing. Does that mean everyone in the Israelis are wrong? No. Does it mean everyone in the Palestinian side is wrong? No, I'm just leveling with you here, okay? This is how the bank cartel works. This is the Matrix. This is how they manipulate things. This is what they are doing in Ukraine already. We're already like this far into it in Ukraine. And now we're beginning here in Israel. It's destabilizing. As I've been mentioning many times before, this is the new world order. It's a new world order. Do you understand? Not the NWA like conspiracy theory shit. It's a world order. The order of the world. The order in which things are done. The order in which things are taken into account with trade, with commerce, okay? With foreign affairs. This is the world order. It's shifting around. And there's a play here for Russia and China, the Middle East and Iran. All these different countries are making a play on America and Europe, who have been dominating the entire world order for the last 200 years, give or take. But they've been dominating the world order. And so this is their opportunity to make those kinds of adjustments, make those kinds of changes. And this is where we're witnessing the legs falling out from underneath the world order as it currently is. I mean, Joe Biden as our president in America is a perfect representation of world order falling apart. The US dollar being replaced by the yuan, by gold, and in some cases even Bitcoin is devastating to Americans. What we are seeing, the US dollar being the world reserve currency, is our number one asset. I just told you about the number one sought after thing in the world is US citizenship. The number one asset that America is holding on to is the US dollar being the world reserve currency. If we lose that status, if Saudi Arabia trades oil with Russia or Africa in their own dollars, in their own currency, or gold or some other kind of currency, that will ruin Americans. Do you understand? Like, this will mean that we'll look like Zimbabwe. Our dollars won't mean anything. How do you protect from that? Obviously, assets, gold, silver, coins, things like that, various other currencies like that, buying Bitcoin, buying other assets that kind of can add as like collateral to your spreadsheet of what you own, buying land, buying resources that are real. That's how you kind of personally make a change for yourself, right? And so I bring all this up to help you understand the larger worldview, to understand the matrix in this entire element of warfare, destruction, the rebuilding, the banking, the asset allocation that these bankers look at to acquire during the rebuilding phase of war. And then the current status of war is a racket. So it's going to be a profiteering venture and they're going to milk it as long as they possibly can. That is what's going on with Ukraine. As I mentioned earlier in the part one of this, I mentioned the Ukraine funding being run out as of last week because of this Speaker of the House shenanigans. They realize that military industrial complex is like, man, we're running out of dough. We're running out of the money for Ukraine. Let's go start a new war. Even better, a spiritual war. Also, a contained war. That's what we want here in America and all these places. They want a contained war. They want to foment all the violence on both sides by promoting division in America and other countries around the world, by getting people to choose sides, okay? And then they divide us while also everyone profits from war, ammunition, oil. All of this is going to be repercussions that are going to occur with these everyday current events. So thanks for tuning in, guys. Really appreciate you guys tuning in and checking me out. You can find me on Matrix Breakers podcasts, Apple, Spotify, and even on YouTube. What helps a lot, subscribe to all of it. including my YouTube channel, by the way. I'm trying to grow that. I'm just posting more on there. And you can check on the whole, I've got the whole setup in here. I know some of y'all just watching or listening to the audio, but I've got a YouTube channel as well. So subscribe there, hit the like button, comment. I want to hear from some feedback from you guys. What do you think about this? What do you think about the crazy warfare? What are your opinions? I'm open. I'm open to both sides, by the way. I'm open to hearing all kinds of stuff. I'm, you know, share with me. I feel like I've learned a lot of historical context around this issue, but please, I'm ready to be enlightened. So feel free for some feedback, comments. Really appreciate you guys tuning in. Peace. War is absolutely a racket. There is no black and white when it comes to warfare. In war, there's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of things that are happening that shouldn't be happening, that maybe don't have to happen. But we have to recognize that there's always going to be differences between peoples. And we know this from group thinking inside of our own country, maybe even in our own city, relevant to even sports teams, sports fanatics. There's always room in the human psyche for competition. There's also room for hatred and warfare and competition to the level of, you know, extinction or rebellion. Things like that are very common. And as a reminder for people who are listening and watching the news and seeing what's happening in Israel and Palestine, and who have been watching over what has been happening in Ukraine with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there's a rich history behind what has been happening in both fronts, as well as across the world. There's always rich history involved in what ultimately leads to warfare. You see, the news media wants you to understand a very low dimension comprehension of what is going on in either Ukraine or in Israel. The point being is, by the way, Taiwan will be next as well. But this is just geopolitics, and we can discuss it more like in a mature way without getting so attached to the emotional outcome of one side versus another. Are there injustices on both sides? Absolutely. But my point being is that war is a part of the human psyche. It's a part of who we are, and that's just the way it is. It also can be motivated by other powers that I speak about a lot. And you have a lot of various banking interests involved in both conflicts with Ukraine and Israel. There are some national interests that are involved in both Ukraine and Israel, being that the U.S. involvement or European involvement, or what we're looking at in Israel, Africa, Egypt, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, the other Middle Eastern countries, there are kind of agendas at play. So what we're witnessing, essentially, to break it down, is geopolitics at play. We have various different elements and factions inside of various countries that either agree or disagree with the way the world is. A lot of people in these various groups want to reshape the world in their view. It is a very basic fundamental understanding of power. Power seeks to control, to dominate. And so when you have these different groups and these different interests inside of nations, they can become the majority of thought inside of these various countries. It's not very hard to see how those things can transform the way people think. What happens is then the power structure creates consensus within the population. The population then goes on to support what would be deemed of a horrific massacre or a horrible endeavor like warfare. These types of things occur all of the time. You know, we were brought into the Middle East based on 9/11. 9/11, this is very similar to it, what's happening in Israel, terrorist attack in for the Twin Towers, bringing them down. It was an attack on the country, and many people were enlisted immediately into the military. They felt a call to action, a call to fight in warfare. Now, what we found out later is that that war didn't have the true purpose that people originally thought it did. And many people lost their lives. Many Americans lost limbs. Many Americans are suffering today from psychotic breaks, being in combat, from being in combat. And they're dealing with horrible repercussions. And that's what war does to a country and to a people. And so when you kind of understand how there were various elements of power involved in the war that went on in Afghanistan, the war on terror, it's an endless war and an infinite war. And it was one of America's longest standing wars, was our war in Afghanistan, over 20 years. Multiple generations of fighters went to fight in that region of the world. Our blood and soil is there in that region of the world. And to this moment, as I speak to you, it was almost, and I don't want to say it's entirely, but it was almost pointless. Because the Taliban, who America was sought to destroy, has now controlled the entire country of Afghanistan. They literally run the government there at this minute. And are there some resistance, and maybe there could be some, you know, element of democracy in Afghanistan? Sure, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. Is that what they want, though? You see, because people are all different. They have their reasoning behind desiring certain governments, desiring certain power structures to exist inside of those governments and inside of those countries. So why does America feel like our wonderful freedoms, our wonderful constitution, our republic, which is what it is, not a democracy, our republic is so insistent on creating the same realities in different countries around the world when that's what they don't really want? They could care less, actually. They enjoy the way that they're going in their democracy or level of it, or their government, or how it is run, whether they have a king and a queen still, you know, in some parts of the world, or whether they have some kind of tribal leader that runs the country. That is up to those countries to decide, because every country and all people have independent individual sovereignty. That is what Americans, okay, that's an American value, and that's how America as a whole and the government should look at the rest of the world, is allowing other independent countries to have individual sovereignty in how they run their nations. Now, that is the reason why we in America don't want to be involved in foreign wars. George Washington spoke about this, obviously, as the country was founded. And so going into the minutiae of Israel and Palestine and the Palestinians, and then, of course, you have Hamas, which is the kind of extremist group there. You can get into the weeds on this, and we can decide who supports who and what and what's more justified. Are these attacks on Israel, on what I would consider innocent people, is that justified because of what Israel's done over time to the Palestinians and the Gaza Strip? Or is it, like, you know, not okay at all for that to happen? Is that going to be, even by a PR standpoint, public relations, was that okay for Hamas to do to Israel and to Israelis? Does that help them in the world stage? Because war, as we learned with Ukraine, if you haven't really kept up with it, war is more PR than it is actual fighting. I would say war is like 80% PR. I've known this when I've studied history. The way the newspapers report certain elements of battle, certain fatigue in the armies, the navies of various countries, or the way they report on battles that are won, battles that are lost, those types of news reports, that PR is going to either motivate someone to enlist, motivate a group of people to enlist, obviously, or it's going to help in negotiations for peace, okay? What kind of PR can we get that's very noticeable that then becomes a part of a negotiation? Those are the very, very important elements of warfare. Very important, because how you look upon the world, how you're viewed by the world, is going to either support you to win or is going to rob support from you and your cause. And so is taking innocent civilians as hostage and then killing them on live TV, is that helping your cause in the world supporting you, or is that not? Now, I'm just talking more strategically here. And people can argue whether that's smart, whether that's dumb. That's the question I'm asking. But, you know, when it comes down to it, people are picking black and white as if that this is just the way it is. Here's what I found interesting. In this particular conflict, there are people, both Israelis, Jews, but Israelis, right? They're both Israelis and Jews, and they're not always both the same. And there are Palestinians, and there are Muslims, and of course, there are what would people consider terrorist group, which is Hamas, okay? These are various groups within a group. However, each of these individuals, by religious sacrosanct, are committed to destroying one another, or at the very least, they're committed to viewing each other as enemies, and not just enemies, but mortal and spiritual enemies. You see, in the war with Ukraine and Russia, they're having a hard time recruiting. They're on both sides. They're having a hard time getting this war going with deep devotion to the conflict from each individual person inside of the military on every level. However, in a conflict with like Israel and Palestine and what is Hamas, which is, again, Palestinians in many cases, that is a little bit of a hairy, prickly situation, because each individual inside of these subgroups, inside of the military even, in these groups, view their cause as spiritual warfare. They see and view the other side as spiritually immoral, and they view the other side as spiritually condemned, okay? This is the kind of level we're speaking to here. Very different than the war with Russia and Ukraine. And I'm just making that as an example because that's currently also happening. They're not fighting to the bitter end there in Ukraine. They're very much like, you know, I'm not saying like it's warfare is horrible, but they're not playing it easy. It's just when you surrender, like that's okay to surrender. There's certain codes of conduct that are followed in that type of warfare scenario. However, when you have these bitter enemies who truly, to the core of each individual, believes that they are spiritually inclined to destroy the other, when you have that level of hatred and intensity, you're not going to get the same code of conduct that we see inside of places like Russia and Ukraine. Again, you can't black and white it. Oh, Russia, oh, Ukrainians, oh, Nazis. Okay, yes, however, when it comes down to the actual fighting, there's some level of conduct that is respected between both groups, okay? I'm just, not all the time, not saying it's perfect, but I'm saying that that tends to happen. So with what's going on there, I just want to mention very clearly, there is no black and white. And guess what? This is a new war. This is an actual war that is being declared by Israel. I mean, this is an official war. And a lot of this happened, there's a lot of various reasons, but we have a lot of weakness here in America. We sent $6 billion back to Iran. Iran funds Hezbollah and Hamas. Everyone knows that. American dollars and American weapons have gone to fund this conflict. I mean, already, just think about that. American dollars and weapons have been used already to kill people in this warfare. That's how involved the military-industrial complex is within America, in other nations, and in foreign wars, foreign transactions, foreign conflicts. So I just want to mention that. At the end of the day, you know, Americans on average, they don't want to see war. They want to see peace, and they want to see happiness, and they want to see, you know, butterflies and rainbows. However, we have to be reminded that that is not how the world works. There's a very, very tiny percent of the population in some parts of Europe and America that live at peace most of the time. Now, I'd say a lot of crime is happening lately in America, and there's a lot more race division and various problems here. But mostly, I would say we're privileged enough in America to live at peace and not understand the intensity of warfare and hatred that still occurs all across the world, okay? All over the world. There's pure hatred. We're talking like, I'm not saying all, but like Japanese and Chinese, like they do not like each other. Okay, like that is the discrimination against them, each other, is real. Okay, and here in America, we still complain that we're this melting pot, yet we have very, very, very little, almost respectable amount of discrimination compared to the rest of the world. Okay, so that's another, you know, high horse that people tend to be on, like, oh, well, we're not, you know, we're not there, we're not good enough. And it's like, man, go look at the rest of the world, okay? Chinese are the most homogeneous population in the world, as well as Israelis, by the way. Israelis, you're not allowed to marry, interracial, things like that are still in existence today in Israel. So to sit here and say like, oh my gosh, America is just so discriminatory. We're the worst people ever. Are you kidding me? Have you ever been anywhere else in the world? They hate each other. Literally, there are people in Africa, there would be in Libya or in Morocco, or even let's just pull away from the Middle East for a second, in Nigeria. There's people who hate each other, and they're from a different tribe. And we're talking like they're neighbors. They live within 5 miles of each other. So there's a lot of element of hatred and discrimination that happens all over the world that I have to say America is not prevalent to as much. Doesn't mean it's non-existent, but it just means that, like, wow, we've come a long way. Let's take our pride in that. My point being is lots of Americans seem to have a lot of, you know, strong opinions one way or another inside of a war halfway across the world once again. And so we have to be very mindful and cautious of our energy, cautious of how we go about transitioning our energy into these various conflicts. You know, this is a part of divide and conquer. This is a part of the power structure's way to create a new war, create new fomenting on both sides to destabilize various aspects of the world. You know, the military-industrial complex, they see what's happening in Ukraine. Mind you, the Ukraine funding has been just money laundering, okay? And Congress just removed the Speaker of the House. This was a Republican, okay? This Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House, was just removed last week. Realizing that that removal of the Speaker of the House deals directly with funding of a war in Ukraine. Notice as soon as this person is dethroned, and there's a serious conversation around the funding of Ukraine's war with Russia, we have this war breakout in Israel. Again, it's not correlating everything together perfectly or like a symphony here, but just be a witness to what's really going on. The military-industrial complex, large, large military companies like Raytheon, BlackRock even, who funds a lot of these military weapons depots and manufacturing companies. There's Lockheed Martin. There's Boeing. These huge, large companies that develop weapons are making a killing when war is happening. We pull out of Afghanistan. Within a month or two, we have war in Ukraine. Now we say, hey, Ukraine war looks like it's fizzing out. Military-industrial complex isn't interested in continuing to push the war because the money's drying up. Money from Congress. Money from America, by the way. Really kind of, really suspicious already, to say the least. And so what you're witnessing is as money dries up in one part of the world, one region of war, another war breaks out in another region very close by, somewhat correlated, but not really. But you have that war breaking out. Now what's happening? Calls for congressional funding, U.S. involvement in this war. This is an ally in war. Now, to be fair, there's a lot more ties to Israel that America has that we in America do not have with Ukraine. Ukraine was not a part of NATO. NATO is an alliance that if one country is attacked, they are all attacked. Ukraine was not a part of NATO. And so we in America and in Europe, we couldn't by peace agreement, by alliance, we couldn't declare war on Russia based on an attack on Ukraine. This was the whole premise of that war. And so the ante is being brought up even higher with Israel. Israel is very, very tied into America in many different ways. And there is a spiritual calling for a lot of conservatives to fund a war and even to back a war in Israel using American boots on the ground. I'm telling you, within hours, we're going to hear conservative people in politics right now talk about boots on the ground in Israel. So again, I just want to clarify that for everyone to understand and get in and realize that this war is not everything that you think it is. So I want to just wrap that up and do a podcast. I'm going to do a part two to this because we're going to talk about how war is a racket and how there's a beautiful, awesome book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman that is actually published in a very fascinating read about how somebody who starts wars basically using banking, financing, and using deals under the table with bribes to politicians and various things. We'll get into that in the part two of this, but I wanted to come on here and address this intense news that's going on. And of course, my heart goes out to every single innocent person involved in warfare. And war is a destructive, horrific thing. It brings out the absolute worst in humanity. And so I just wanted to chime in on this. Part two will come at you very, very soon. Appreciate you guys tuning in.